And welcome to the HalfGuarded.com Gilbert Ford Power Hour. I'm your host, Zachary T. Gilbert. It's my co-host, Dan Ford. How you doing, Dan?
Just great, sir. Just great. Obviously better than you. You don't sound as good. Did you catch something from me?
Yeah, not feeling too good. I guess I got the, I've got the jungle fever. And there's only one cure for that. Yeah.
Yeah. What's that?
That's, I don't have an answer.
Okay. God, this is a bad yes and moment.
Yeah. This,
oh man, this I hate that I got you sick through the internet waves. I hate that's the new thing now, getting sick
through the internet. Thanks Al Gore. Appreciate that. Transmitting disease and germs and bacteria through the air, through wires, into my system, stuffing up my nose, giving me a temperature. It's a lot of fun.
Hey, maybe those crazy idiots that think Wi-Fi like makes your testicles fall off or whatever they think.
Maybe they're right. Maybe that's why I have the flu.
Sure. It,
I didn't have the flu before Wi-Fi. Just saying. I mean, I had it when I was a kid, but yeah, there were still cordless phones back then.
Sure.
So
this is a digression. How do cordless phones work?
Well, I'm glad you asked, Dan, because we are shifting the format of the show into a purely mechanical, you could say, Altus-like show, where we discuss how household items work.
So, sure, we're moving from the half-guarded family to how stuff works.
Yeah, but this is our way more, like, autistic.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you say autistic? Like, Archie Diesel versus like, Steam. It's going to be wild. And don't you dare besmirch an Otis elevator, you son of a bitch.
Why do those cordless phones? You know what, Dan?
The thing of the cordless phone is you have the receiver, right? So I'm guessing that kind of acts as like a modem or base point, and then it transmits the signal to the antenna from the receiver. So like the receiver's the real phone, and the phone's just kind of like a thing that gives and receives information. Kind of like a cell phone now uses a tower, maybe.
Is it anything like a wireless keyboard or a wireless mouse that has like the little USB hub, like the little nub, and then you can.
I think that has to be it because you remember you had to put your phone into a base, you know, a port, if you will.
There's a term for what those things are called.
I think we'll save that for a couple of weeks when we get Jimmy Hazen on, the cordless phone expert, Mr. Hazen. Yeah, it's definitely not a name I just made up. So.
He's a big fan of the podcast. He's a big fan of the whole Half-Guarded Network.
He's a big fan. Comments on everything. Big fans of him. But yeah, not feeling so well. Probably sick from the internet. But Dan, this week we're going to kind of recap the whole season in college football. Right?
Yeah.
You got some awards. I've got some hardware right here to hand out a little bit later. Before we get into that, though, you had a chance to watch Packers-Cowboys. You were one of the 40 million.
Yep.
The 50-plus percent of households that watched this game. Any thoughts on this game as a whole? Like, I know you don't, for people who don't know, Dan doesn't really watch a ton of NFL. He's more of a college guy. He's kind of a hipster that way. NFL's too mainstream for him. He's got to watch, like, whack football.
Yes, I watch. I probably did watch more classic whack football games this year than I did the NFL.
On vinyl. I don't know how you watch a football game on vinyl, but you do it.
So. I have my ways. I think part of it is I grew up a Cowboys fan, and over the last few years, like, Jerry Jones has worked really hard to push any kind of fanhood away. Especially last year when he signed Greg Hardy, that was kind of like the last straw. But I didn't catch a lot of them this year, but I did hear all the good things about how fun Dak Prescott was and how well he was doing. So I did watch the playoff game, and Dak Prescott looks legit in that offense and seems like a better fit for the direction the Cowboys should be going in with Ezekiel Elliott in that offensive line. I do remember.
You said the Cowboys kind of reminded you like the Seahawks from like when that probably started about 5 years ago.
Yeah,
like,
because
the
young
rookie mobile quarterback who can make plays. You've got a great running back. Like, do they have Marshawn Lynch, Elliott? They're different running backs, but they're both really good. and a defense, though, that probably isn't the same as that Seattle defense.
Yeah, but that Seahawks team had a great offensive line as well.
Yeah.
That's the other big key. The big difference, obviously, is that Seahawks team, like, Pete Carroll came in and immediately drafted, like, a shit ton of awesome defensive players.
Yeah.
And so they had this really young, excellent defense that the Cowboys obviously don't have. But I think the Cowboys are going to be able to get one pretty quickly, because one of the reasons the Seahawks were able to have such a well-balanced, deep team was because they had an awesome quarterback on a rookie contract. You know, obviously quarterbacks make way more money than anybody else in the NFL. And so if you're able to have a top 10 quarterback making rookie contract money, that's such a huge advantage because of the money you can then spend everywhere else.
No, and the other advantages that just come with being Dallas and being one of the most popular teams in the league, if you go and play for Dallas, you're going to get better endorsements, even if you're just a defensive lineman, because people are going to know who you are. You're going to have more jersey sales. You're going to be able to charge more for appearance fees and things like that. So, like, on top of the advantage of being able to offer a little bit more money, you also have that Dallas Cowboys brand, which has stayed pretty strong, even with the woes of the Cowboys.
And you're more likely to make things like Pro Bowl bonuses, because the Dallas Cowboys, like, if you're a good player for the Cowboys, you're going to make the Pro Bowl.
Yeah.
Period. Because you're going to be on TV more than almost anybody else. So,
yeah.
In national games.
So, it's a pretty good deal to go to the Cowboys.
Yep.
I think they will be an attraction for some of these veterans. Even, like, you know, we mentioned Seattle. Some of these guys, you know, get ready to go into free agency. Dallas can target one of those guys and bring him in. So yep. it's a team with a lot of growth. Because that defense didn't look so hot, especially in the first half.
Yeah, the defense was trash. It was like hot. I know Aaron Rodgers is good. I know the Packers have a good passing offense.
And they don't ever get called for holding either.
No, that'll never happen. But when you can't hold, like, a lead with 30 seconds, you can't make it to overtime with 30 seconds, like, come on. That's trash.
Well, but to be fair, Dan, that's just kind of what Aaron Rodgers does. You can't, and me and Wes will talk about this later, you can't let Aaron Rodgers have the ball in the last 2 minutes.
I feel like with 30 seconds left, you should be able to hold that.
Yeah, well.
Like, if you unless you're just straight trash, you should be able to hold 30 seconds.
You say that, but my boy, NFL MVP Matt Ryan, also known as a guy who don't give him the ball in the last couple of seconds. Because I bet Seattle thought they had that game won about 5 years ago, and Matt Ryan threw a Hail Mary, field goal, Falcons go to the NFC Championship game.
Sure.
And lose. So it's similar to probably what happens this week in a heartbreaking fashion.
That makes everybody in Atlanta give up football forever.
Yeah, it's always going to be sad. But Dan, I think before we go into a recap, let's keep the NFL ball rolling. Let's jump over to me and Wes in the roundup.
Ooh.
And welcome to the NFL roundup here on halfguarded.com's NFL roundup. I'm Zachary Gilbert. I'm here with West Coast Wes, and we're here to recap an exciting divisional round and preview the NFL's Final Four.
Boo! That's what I say about the playoffs this weekend. Boo all the way around, but congratulations to your Atlanta
Thank you.
Falcons.
It was one of the most agonizing experiences of my life, that game. I wasn't happy at all until the very end, basically.
Yeah, you just couldn't let go of your fears until the clock struck zero.
Yeah. Basically, the back of my head, I'm like, something horrible's going to happen. And then I think it was the last two interceptions was when I finally, like, kind of saw the light at the end of the tunnel there. It's not a lot of fun. I'm also sick now, so we'll see if I'm sick when I'm recording the part with Dan, but I probably still will be. so that's a lot of fun too, Wes.
Yeah, I'm sick. I'm sick as well, but not literally like you are. I'm sick that the season's over, but not really. As loyal listeners of this show would know, I was pretty well resigned to Seattle going one and done in the playoffs this year. So I'm going to go ahead and live vicariously through you. And I am happy for the Atlanta fans. And now you got to see it through. Now you have to take it all away because, God forbid, it's any of these other teams.
Well, and it was a good win because it felt like a typical really bad Atlanta weekend. Hawks lost to the Celtics in Al Horford's homecoming on national TV. President insults the entire city.
Ugh.
And then, like, Atlanta's going to take the L in their big playoff game. But they won, so it kind of went to what I'm used to. So that was nice.
City yeah, needed that win. Yeah, after the president insulting her.
Yeah, man. Well, I mean, I think he's out of line. I just never thought of Atlanta as the shithole that it's been made out to be recently. But the energy in the dome looked like it was good. That crowd looked like it was into it. It was uplifting to see the fans rising up, as they say, waving all those towels around. And so there are much worse teams to lose to. And again, I mean, there's nobody on the Falcons that I hate or anything like that. So I'm feeling good. And now, again, you have to shut the president down now.
Get this Super Bowl. That's what this really comes down to. That's kind of, you know, if you're rooting for Green Bay this week, probably voted for Trump.
Probably a racist.
Probably racist. Yeah. I think that's fair to say.
I think so.
Because Green Bay full of white people, Atlanta full of black people. So just kind of stay woke sense. There. Yeah.
I bet if you went into Green Bay right now, there'd be a bunch of anti-MLK stuff hung up on all the buildings downtown and everything. And, you know, they'd be talking about what a piece of garbage Abraham Lincoln was. All of that. So
yeah, I think it's Robert E. Lee Day is what they call it in Green Bay. That's what it's.
That's exactly what it was.
Because Green Bay was the only city in Wisconsin to succeed to the Confederacy. People forget that.
It's no surprise. That's no surprise. I forgot that, but that's no surprise, too.
Yeah, and Aaron Rodgers was also a big fan of Succession.
Yeah, he's a big Klan guy, from what I hear, amongst the other things, too. So
huge Klan, against abolition, all that fun stuff. But we'll get to Aaron Rodgers in a second. We just kind of recapped Atlanta-Seattle. Atlanta gets by in what I felt was a squeaker, but some people say Atlanta dominated. I'm not sure. But our second game that day, New England-Houston, and maybe one of the worst quarterback performances by a Texan quarterback in the playoffs. I say that, but now I think about maybe Matt Schaub last year.
Yeah, well, here you go, Houston, yet again in prime time. I mean, there's nothing worse. And year after year, they get that spot in part because they're in a division that's been down. They never let us down. And I would have been fine with a Patriots blowout. You never hear me say that, but apparently they didn't recognize that I needed to be entertained. And as a result, we got this kind of slow, boring game that inevitably widened as the game went on. And you're right, man. I don't know about all that money. I mean, I can't be mad at Brock himself, but if you're the Houston Texans, it's almost looking like you just have to, once again, eat that contract, so to speak, and look elsewhere, because they're not going anywhere with that guy at the top.
Yeah, this, in retrospect, this might be one of the worst contracts in NFL free agent history.
It could, very well could be. Like, if you compare it, like, you remember that Rashard Lewis contract with the Orlando Magic, maybe 10 years ago or more and stuff? You know, that wasn't as bad as this. I mean, he was a fairly well-proven player and all that, and they overpaid him, and then he tested positive for steroids or whatever. But I'm trying to think of an NFL equivalent right now. This stands out to me. It'd probably be some other quarterback signing, to be honest with you. But
this reeks right of now, one of those – but you're right. It reeks of one of those, like, mid-odds – really bad NBA contracts, like when what was his name? The Colgate got like $50 million over like 3 years or something crazy like that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, before the NBA was handing out, you know, 4 year $64 million deals like they're nothing, just based on what the market is now for players. Yeah. This is the equivalent of that. I mean, this is an NBA contract is what he's got right now, and he's less deserving than most of those mid-level guys that get those sorts of deals. So it's a disgrace.
Yeah. So that was a pretty bad game. We shift over to Sunday, and we get Green Bay-Dallas, and the NFL really wanted this game, and boy, did it deliver. I believe 40-plus million people viewed this game. It was pretty worthy of all the hype. It was a pretty fun game.
Yeah, this is the game that the NFL, like you said, they dream about this sort of situation. This is one of those games that transcends football fans and even casual sports fans. I mean, you probably had housewives talking about this game, forced to watch, of course, on a Sunday afternoon. But it seemed like everyone was all over this, and it was pretty evenly divided from what I could see in terms of Cowboy fans, mostly an older crowd coming out of the woodwork, rooting on America's team. And then, like we said, the legion of white supporters who were behind the Packers. And it did deliver, but the outcome certainly wasn't what we were looking for.
No, not at all. And but Aaron Rodgers did have a pretty good game, and nice little some heroics there at the end when I think we all thought this game was going to overtime.
Yeah, we sure did. I mean, I give him credit. Credit where credit is due. That's what we do here. And also, once again, credit to his receivers. I mean, as great as those throws are, these guys catching passes for him, whether it's Randall Cobb or the hurt Jordy Nelson or whoever else is out there, he always seems to have somebody who pulls it in and miraculously makes a catch either in the end zone or close to the sideline. And he did it again. And, I mean, as a side note, have we not supported Joe Buck for months now, kind of, on this show?
Well, give him credit. Kind of low-key, but it kind of got on my nerves Sunday.
He threw it all away is what he did for me.
Yeah.
I mean, all this time, and now it's like, my God, every single time, the great Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers, what will he do next? And then, you know, I get petty about it, and I start making fun of Joe Buck's appearance, criticizing his life decisions and stuff. So, I mean, obviously I have problems, too. But the point is that if he could just cool it a little bit on the hyperbole when it comes to the guy, and maybe bring up the guy's personal life as well and put it all in perspective.
Yeah, maybe, you know. Because you know who talked to his parents this year? Matt Ryan.
Yeah.
Same. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know who else probably talked to his parents? Dak Prescott, who I thought had a pretty good game. You can't really blame this loss on him, really. This was more on the defense from Dallas, especially in that first quarter, that first half, too.
Yeah, I think so. I did. I thought Dak did what he needed to do. And, I mean, I'll throw this to you. I think I know the answer already, but when it comes to the Tony Romo discussion, are you like me and you think that's just a bunch of nonsense? Or is there something to Romo maybe somehow? What was he going to do, play defense? I don't even know what the question is at this point.
I don't think Romo sticks around. I think they let Romo go. I think because Romo's done everything right, so I think Dallas is going to be very accommodating to Romo. If he wants to leave. If he wants to stay, this could get really ugly.
It could. And then...
Because Dak had a great... Romo wouldn't have won that game either. If Dak pretty much did, then Aaron Rodgers won it. You know? Dak had that game at least tied. So I think that's... You know, you can't really hang this on Dak and think Romo would have done a better job. Because maybe Romo would have scored a little bit slower.
That's true. What do you think Sanchez would have done?
This game probably would have been like 30-0 in the first half had Sanchez started for Green Bay.
Yeah, you're probably right about that. No. But, you know, he's a nice guy to have on the sideline. He always holds a clipboard well. He looks like he sincerely enjoys himself in that
role. Well, he's handsome. You want a good-looking guy, you know? Surround yourself with beautiful people.
Sure, man. It does elevate the image of the team, and it never hurts to have a guy like Mark Sanchez just standing there on your sideline. So, I mean, he kind of goes along with the entire vibe with the cheerleaders and all that, but unfortunately none of it was enough this week, and now we're looking at, well, you know, let's just move on to the next game.
No, we'll get it on though. And then our main event that night moved because of an ice storm. Low-key, great move by Goodell, because it definitely increased the ratings here. Pittsburgh-KC in a game that no one really cared about till the end. That's how I kind of felt. I felt like on Twitter the vibe was we're kind of emotionally spent from Dallas, Green Bay, and we'll watch this, but we're not going to care as much. But then by the end, it was a pretty fun game.
Yeah, it was definitely a matter of everyone being completely drained by that opening game, and as a result, I mean, it's kind of a weird slot, too, you know, Sunday night, an unexpected Sunday night game, and it was a dark game, literally, cold and stuff, so it didn't have the razzle-dazzle of that. I mean, that Cowboys-Packers game was like just straight to the vein, if you will, and this was more of a slow burn. But you're right, it did pay off at the end of the game, and once again, Andy Reid and company so close yet so far away. I mean, are you critical of the way that they handle it, or is it more of just a matter of execution? And you don't.
I think it's a matter of execution, and I think it's just some of your faults that you're going to have when Alex Smith is your quarterback. Alex Smith's a really bad quarterback, but he's very athletic, so he kind of gets away with it. But if you look at when Andy Reid had to burn some timeouts, that's because Alex Smith couldn't make the proper adjustments. There are just some things he can't do, and if I'm KC and Deshaun Watson falls to me, I'm taking him. I think that's we talked about it last week. That's a really good pickup for KC and probably makes him a Super Bowl contender right away.
Well, if nothing else, I mean, it is definitely – I mean, you would obviously make the move with Watson and put him in the starting role or close now, but if they want to stick with Alex Smith, you've got a nice package right behind him to ease his way into the game. And I mean, I'm sure Houston would love to have a guy like that right now too, if they can put their pride aside. But I'm with you. I mean, if I'm a Kansas City fan, of course I'd be disappointed. But in a way, I thought they should have been down by at least two touchdowns, and it was more on Pittsburgh early on in that game, not punching it in the end zone and kind of abandoning what got them, I don't know, 80, 90 yards down the field on any given drive. Yeah, so.
And kind of what you think with Pittsburgh football. You kind of think of punching it in at the goal line with your really good running back, and they didn't. And Le'Veon Bell's a power back.
Yep.
You know, like he's known for his pass catching, but this is a guy who can run between the tackles just fine. You know, this isn't Reggie Bush. So it's kind of weird not to do that. It's kind of a weird, maybe Tomlin's not that good of a coach. Maybe Terry Bradshaw's right.
Yeah, that could be it. And, or maybe we'll give him the benefit of the doubt and just say that he was trying to, I don't know, save Le'Veon Bell but not in that situation. That just doesn't make any sense. It was puzzling to me to see them go away from that, but I guess they survived it and they live to play another day, and who knows, maybe he takes advantage of it next.
Did you kind of get this feeling after this kind of felt like Kansas City ceiling, this version of the Chiefs? I'm not sure they can really go much further, how they're built now. Yeah, not saying blow it up, but I think there is some tweaking, especially at quarterback and at running back. Those are two very important positions that they probably need to fix.
Right. Yeah, you're right. This is not a developing team where they're just starting the ascent. It does seem like the peak in terms of the way they're currently constructed. And let's not forget that they were the beneficiaries as much as anybody of Oakland and their misfortune. So I think Kansas City needs to look at, like you said, not overhauling the team, but making some fairly significant changes here and there. And then they will be a contender if they make the right moves, but they can't.
But I mean, this is also a team. Eric Berry could leave in free agency next year. This could all kind of fall apart. That's a very tough division because Denver is pretty much a quarterback away, a competent quarterback, not even a good one, just a competent quarterback away from kind of taking KC's spot there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just it's a league of short windows, and even your great franchises, say like the New England Patriots, I mean, even they will usually have a drop-off period where they're a little bit down.
They've had to reinvent themselves. That's what makes the Patriots kind of remarkable. We've seen like three different, you know, or four different kind of evolutions of the Patriots.
Exactly. And it seems like after about 3 years, 2 or 3 years of a team, you really need to switch things up a little bit, reinvent yourself, like you said, and Kansas City's at that point. I mean, I think to me they're almost stale now. And so if they don't address things, they could find themselves in a world of hurt in that division.
Yeah. All right, but let's jump ahead to these games this week. We're here. We got three real football games left. Sorry, Pro Bowl. And let's start things off. Sunday, 3:05, last game ever in the Georgia Dome. Green Bay goes to Atlanta. Atlanta, 4.5, 5-point favorite.
Yeah, last game in the Georgia Dome for real this time, and a lot of great memories as we've seen over the years. I mean, I've been on the Atlanta train for a little while now, and I know you have reason to be doubtful. And in this particular case, I mean, I think this game is pretty close to a pick'em just based on the way that the Packers are playing right now. They seem to have a little bit of mojo, but I like Atlanta's energy, like I said earlier, and I like Atlanta's defense more than I like Green Bay's defense, that's for sure. I just think Matt Ryan and crew, that's enough weapons to really – I mean, I'm talking about like 45 points is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think over-under, we're looking at 61. I think it's one of the highest over-unders in the history of NFL playoff football. I think we're going to see a lot of offense. But this just – Green Bay winning just kind of felt like God giving us one last horrible moment in Georgia Dome because he hates me.
Ooh.
It's kind of hot.
Yeah, man, I mean,
Sunday. That's one last bad thing to happen.
That is one. I mean, if that does happen, there's definitely some soul searching to be. That's just kind of one of those ones where afterwards you just need to go for a walk and just kind of look either to the sky or look around or meditate on it. I mean, depending on what you believe in and really question life, because it just doesn't make any sense. And this is one where I think good needs to prevail, and I'm predicting that. I like the Falcons too much, and I'm going to go with a 48-31 final score. I think the home crowd is really – I mean, that was a solid crowd. I know Atlanta gets a bad rap, but I liked the volume that I heard, and I like
the looks. The thing with the Atlanta fans is, like, they don't – the thing with the fan base in Atlanta is, like, they don't really show up when times are tough, but when times are good, they're probably one of the best fan bases you can ask for.
Yeah, so that's what it seems like. It's not that they're you know, we're not talking fair weather fans here and stuff. It's like, just save your energy for when it's worth cheering. That's what I think they do.
Yeah, it's just not cool to cheer when your team's 3-13. Sorry.
No.
Sorry, Browns. No, sorry. You know what? If you're cheering for your team, if you're a Cleveland fan and you were cheering in that last game, you're a dork.
Yeah, you are. That shows a certain level of desperation that I'm not comfortable with either. And so I applaud Atlanta fans and their approach. But, I mean, what's your final score? I mean, you have a feeling about this game. You're going to commit
to anything? I think Green Bay 41, Atlanta 38, Aaron Rodgers last-minute heroics. And then I cry myself to sleep that night. And I don't watch the Super Bowl. That's what happens. If that score, I can guarantee I'll talk about the Super Bowl on this show, but I will not really want to watch it. I will probably go to a party and spend more time socializing with the gals than watching the game with the boys.
With the ladies, exactly. Yeah, that's how you use it.
Or I'll be outside smoking a cigarette like a degenerate outcast.
That's right. You know, you walk into your party and you find the spare room where the household animals are. You pet the cats, go out in the back and throw a ball around for whatever.
Maybe rifle through a couple of medicine cabinets, see if there's something fun in there. See if your buddy's wife, see if she's got a vibrator, see if there's a strap on in there, see if they're into something weird, you know? That's the time to learn a lot about your friends when you're not paying attention to the game.
Wasn't going to give away trade secrets, but I mean, you pretty much laid it out on the table there, and I'm with you. I mean, that's what we're faced with. That's why this game is huge, not only for the Super Bowl weekend. I mean, think about what happens. How interested will you be in the following game, even if Atlanta goes out? You going to tell me you're going to have any sort of interest in watching that game?
Yeah, I can think of the last time Atlanta hosted an AFC Championship game and lost, and I couldn't even tell you who the Ravens even played in the AFC title. Maybe Denver? Is that when Flacco had the Hail Mary pass or whatever? I can't remember. I don't know.
Yeah, that's what I would guess too. But I mean, the pros that we are, we should know this. Yeah. But the fact is that, I mean, I remember where I was. I was at the University of Washington at a basketball game, but I was out on the concourse watching the end of that game. And to see it go down the way that it did, I mean, it was horrible, and so I can only imagine how a person in your position felt at that time. Yeah, well, I've had heartbreaking losses, but that one sticks with you. It does.
Yeah, it does. It really stung, and I just expect the same thing. Because it's Atlanta, and you know what? Bet against the obvious. I mean, bet with the obvious until it doesn't happen.
Yeah, I think I think you stick with what's worked for you, too. This whole time, you've been cautiously optimistic about the Atlanta Falcons, so I wouldn't expect you to come out and pick them, but you can count on me. Like I said, 48-31, and Aaron Rodgers, some sort of illness or broken leg. I mean, God forbid.
That's what we're rooting for. Like, or maybe, you know, I think, but you know, the Falcons last week, they had a future who's in a custody battle with Russell Wilson's wife, Ciara, on the sidelines.
Sure is.
Maybe the Falcons invite Aaron Rodgers' brother, the one, was this Jordan Rodgers from The Bachelor? Maybe have him on the sidelines. Maybe it's grandfather's grave. You bring out the tombstone, put that out there.
Yeah, really make it personal. You go get one of Aaron Rodgers' scorned ex-lovers as well.
I think that should be the new thing for the Falcons going forward, is you just always have an ex-lover or girlfriend of the opposing team's quarterback.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, who do you get for Aaron Rodgers? You go out and get, like, Dorsey Levens or something? I guess that's a little...
Or you get the Filipino boy he was having sex with last night.
Yeah, that's... If you can find him, if he hasn't been.
Or no, you get his lover, Christian McCaffrey. Let's see.
Yeah, of course. I mean, man, Christian, we haven't known this for very long, but he certainly has made the rounds. And I think that would be a distraction for old Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, remember that story first broke here? Christian McCaffrey, closet homosexual.
You heard it here first, and I mean, I'm happy for the guy, but it could affect this game if he shows up. So let's bring him out.
Yeah, I see. That's what, okay. But our next game, Pittsburgh, New England. This feels like a old meets new kind of battle, right? Like the Patriots are kind of like the new Steelers of the '70s, kind of. You got, you know, it just feels like a good classic NFL matchup. But let's see. New England is favored in this game by 6. Over-under sitting at 51. No major injuries for either team, really. No one's out, except obviously Gronkowski. Kind of like Pittsburgh here. Is that wrong?
It's not wrong. I like Pittsburgh here as well, too. I think they're the better team right now than New England is. And I mean, it's a tough one for me. This is another rooting interest thing. I mean, these are two teams that Seattle's had a recent history with on the biggest stage as well. And, you know, we're not big fans of Big Ben Roethlisberger here on this show. Another quarterback who's done harm off the field, on the field.
But we're not fans of Tom Brady, another quarterback who's done harm off the field. The cell phones.
Yeah, he sure has. And footballs and everything football, in between, probably.
Which, you know, cell phones and footballs, that's a little bit worse than like one college girl. Just saying.
Yeah. I think that's a debate that can be had, and you can make a reasonable argument for Big Ben. I mean, it, you know, mistakes happen when you're young and all that. And Tom Brady's been a grown man, and this has all happened. And you know, he really doesn't have a lot of excuse. So it's going to be tough for me. I mean, I'm going to be rooting for the Steelers. I think as far as the game goes, though, I just like Le'Veon Bell too much right now. I think he's a machine. And that Antonio Brown character is not too bad at his position either. So there's a lot that New England has to deal with.
The Bell thing, I'm kind of interested in that because I think back to the New England-Seattle game where Seattle kind of ran all over New England.
Yes.
If I remember correctly.
Yes, they did.
And Pittsburgh arguably has a better offensive line and definitely has a better running back because they have the best running back in the league probably. You know, Pittsburgh can run the ball and they can play ball control and just not make mistakes and actually get it into the end zone this week. I really like their chances because they went on the road and won at KC, and that's not an easy place to go win.
Yeah, Pittsburgh's one of those teams where it doesn't seem like you hear them going on the road and you don't really think much of it at all. It just doesn't seem like it's much of a factor. They play the way they play regardless of where the game is. And, you know, that Seattle team that looked really good against New England mid-year, this Pittsburgh team is better than that team was on that night, even at every position. I mean, a hobbled Russell Wilson still, but they've got the firepower to get this done. I don't think much of that New England defense. So again, this has kind of an offensive potential, but I just don't see this one being scored high. Now, what is the over under on this game?
Like we're sitting at around 50, 51. I could see something like, I could see maybe 30, 25.
Yeah.
Wouldn't shock me.
I could see that too. I mean, based on what we saw last week, it's like I think Pittsburgh is a team that just values as high octane as they are. It seems like they value time of possession, and they're not looking to run it up. They're just looking to pound it. So that in mind, though, I mean, we saw them throughout the year put up a few high octane games. I like Pittsburgh to get it done, 34-24. How's that sound?
Yeah, I like Pittsburgh to win too. I think. Probably wins by 2 scores, maybe 9 points.
And then,
So I just don't love that offense. I just know that New England offense is ready yet from the transition they have to make post Gronk. I think next year when New England can kind of go a little more 4 wide, a little more vertical, they'll look a little bit better. But right now, I'm just I mean, as much as I love Malcolm Mitchell and Floyd, just not sure they're there yet.
No, I'm not either. I mean, again, it's a testament as much as we detest the guy in some ways. I mean, Brady makes these guys out to look more impressive than they are. And of course the white squadron that they always have is always very effective. It'll be interesting to see them next year with McCaffrey out there because you know that's gonna happen. So
interesting to see how his lifestyle is, you know, kind of changes the locker room there. Because you know, Brady's a Trump guy. So
he is. Yeah, he is. But, you know, I think there's like a behind-closed-door sort of thing where even though he's a Trump guy, you know, you get these guys, you get a hot shower going or whatever. Things happen. A guy like Edelman, I mean, you can't tell me that a guy like Edelman just isn't into whatever's going on anywhere, anytime, any place. It makes him a fun guy.
I mean, so, he's always got his bottle of KY gel and he's ready to go. You know, he's got a little travel pack up his butt.
Definitely.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah.
He poops it out.
Yeah, putting it all out on the table yet again, but it's not false. So, but you know, I don't know. New England's certainly capable of winning this game. It's just, to me, as you alluded to, it's not maybe as strong as teams in years past. And who have they beaten in the playoffs this year? Let's think about it that way. Not exactly a who's who. It's the Houston goddamn Texans.
And not, you know what? As good as they've been all year, who they really played? You know, exactly. they lost to Seattle. And who they, you know?
Yeah. Well,
I can't remember a big victory for New England all year. They matched up with the West, which was one of the weaker, you know, divisions of the NFC.
Not
super impressive.
Same story with them most years. I mean, as good as they've been, they don't exactly have to slug their way through the regular season because their division, I mean, as much as we rip on the AFC South, the East turned out to be pretty bad when it was all said and done.
They sent two playoff teams. So,
well, yeah, technically they did, and we'll get
if we're counting that performance by Miami as a playoff team.
True. They backdoor their way into the playoffs, but yeah. I'm with you.
They McCaffrey'd their way into the playoffs, if you will.
They sure did.
So you're liking Steelers Falcons. Maybe the weirdest Super Bowl. I think just put the Falcons in there, it feels weird, though.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that could have been weirder at this point probably would have been Falcons and Chiefs. That would have been...
That's probably the one the NFL didn't want the most, I'd imagine. Falcons-Chiefs just feels like a... Who?
Yeah.
Would be like, what's your grandma saying about this? Like, she doesn't know who plays for these people.
She doesn't. In marketing... Alex Smith versus Matt Ryan. I mean, that just doesn't have the same sort of ring to the masses that
probably a lot of Michael Vick discussion for some reason if that game happens. You know,
we'd be inundated with Michael Vick stories and
Michael Vick, and then like Eric Berry had cancer stories. You would probably hate Eric Berry after this bye week of how many stories they'll run about him.
You would, and you'd even hate we do a lot of Derek Thomas retrospectives and things like that, and you'd hate him after the fact. So it's probably best for the Chiefs that they stayed out of this business, and you know, that's the thing about the Patriots and the Packers or some of the teams like that going. I mean, it's tough to hate them more than they already are, but
Remember, if it's Packers Patriots, 2 weeks of Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady talk.
Oh,
2 weeks.
God. Make it stop.
You're going to hear Skip Bayless. Yeah.
Skip Bayless. We're going to hear Skip Bayless all right after his
Cowboys. Oh, is a Super Bowl in Fox this year? Because it's going to be a lot of undisputed commercials.
There's a lot of undisputed commercials. And just think, I mean, we thought Joe Buck was bad this week. If Joe Buck is calling Tom Brady versus Aaron Rodgers, I mean, I'm serious, man. All the things we talked about, all the other options you have.
Or even Phil Sims. Like, really, there's no option, really, where we don't have Aaron Rodgers, like, getting his dick sucked. Like, you can pick any one of the big three who would call the game, and it's going to be awful. Because you're going to Collinsworth, Sims, or Buck.
Jim Nance. Jim Nance isn't any stranger to loving on these types of guys, particularly Brady. So we're screwed. I mean, this is where we need the alternate audio from some sort of unbiased outside source, and I don't know.
The Westwood One feed.
Yeah, exactly. A little Kevin Harlan action.
Yeah, Kevin Harlan and like Boomer Esiason.
Yeah, exactly. Or even pick like a Kevin Harlan and. I mean, who's somebody you could bring in who just speak their mind a little bit?
How about just Kevin Harlan by himself?
Yeah, Kevin Harlan with a...
Do we need two guys, you know?
Kevin Harlan and a Basset Hound or a dog of some sort that just barks on touchdowns and penalties. And
I like that.
Carry it.
Yeah. Growls and penalties. Or like growls, like when there's like an unnecessary challenge.
Yeah, exactly.
That'd be
very emotional dog.
So or like if a black player celebrates a touchdown, he like a real race, but he's kind of racist. It's kind of weird.
Racist Basset Hound who's vengeful and out for justice based on what happened to his fellow dogs at the hands of an NFL player a long time ago. I mean, I think it can make for a fun listen. And then Harlan just carry the play-by-play as he's known to do.
Which reminds me, we'll cover this when we get to Super Bowl week, Wes, but we will have the return of the Puppy Bowl on Animal Planet this year.
Yeah, and the Kitten Halftime Show to go along with it. I mean, it's really developed into something special. What are you going to pick? That or Lady Gaga? I mean, I think the choice is fairly obvious.
Even over the pregame coverage, I'll watch the Puppy Bowl up until kickoff. I don't need to hear Joe Brown argue with Bill Cowher about who can suck Aaron Rodgers' dick the best.
I don't need to hear anybody argue about that, quite frankly. Yeah. So I'll be with you. I'll be on Animal Planet before, during, and after a lot of that game.
I might go all Puppy Bowl this year. If it's Pats Packers, good chance I'm watching nothing but the Puppy Bowl.
Yeah,
I'm a lot happier.
We'll keep the listener updated on this, but right now, as it stands, things are trending towards an all Animal Planet Super Bowl Sunday. If in fact the heel teams win this week. Yeah. So keep your eyes on that.
A lot of heel versus heel matchups here.
Bad
booking by Goodell. You know, poor. You build up the strong heels, but he can't build a good, baby face.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I know he'd make money off that matchup, but really at the end of the day, he has to lay his head on the pillow and think about what he's done. And you can't feel good about this potential matchup. So once again, I say to you, your team is our only hope. Matt Ryan, it rests on his shoulders and the mighty hands and shoulders of Julio Jones.
We're the team of the haters, and the haters and trolls need us to win.
Yeah, yeah, sure as hell do. I am a card-carrying hater and troll in this particular instance, so I'm... Yeah.
Skip Bayless, so...
Yeah. Jesus, what a situation we found ourselves
in. Yeah, well, politics makes strange bedfellows, Wes. You know?
It certainly does. It certainly does. Yeah. And the enemy of the enemy is my friend and all that. And so we're looking at some dark times this weekend. Friday, we kick things off with a new America. But I think Sunday is where the tone really gets set.
We'll kind of figure out how this Trump presidency will go with these two games. I think, you know, next week we'll be back to kind of recap the games. There's that bye week, though, and I'm not a fan of this. I think we've had it now for, what, 2 or 3 years? Not a fan of the bye week between the NFC title game and the Super Bowl.
I'm not either. I think that you go into that Super Bowl game, it feels like it takes them a quarter to dust things off. There's no momentum whatsoever. And as you said earlier, you were inundated with worthless media story after worthless media story. So I think this needs to be changed, and hopefully it will. But I'm not holding my breath.
Yeah. Before we get out of here, we'll do a little talking MMA. Is that what I heard?
Sure, man. Yeah. Yair Rodriguez just retired BJ Penn on Sunday night. I don't know if you saw that one.
I saw the GIF. It seemed like they took their time calling that one. Ref did.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, thankfully.
I think he was pounding his face in for like three. It was like the scene from A Christmas Story. It got kind of old. Kind of creepy, you know.
Yeah, you get a little nervous when you see a guy get hit with every single type of kick in the book. So, that's what I hope proverbially, that or figuratively or whatever you want to say. That's what I hope the Falcons do to the Packers. I hope the Falcons are Yair Rodriguez and Aaron Rodgers is BJ Penn. So that's talking MMA as far as I'm concerned.
There we go. All right. But I think we're going to get out of here and back to the show.
All right. And we're back. So, Dan, I have to ask, do you like Wes's suggestion of maybe the dog in the booth with Jim Nantz? I'm sorry, with Kevin Harlan calling the Super Bowl? I think that's the way to go. Maybe a beagle who growls at bad calls and just kind of makes noises in general.
See, I don't like beagles because they're yappy-ass dogs.
Well, we thought maybe a bloodhound, too. It's a little, you know. We're afraid the bloodhound might be a little racist. That's the issue with bloodhounds. You know, there's a, you know, it's kind of that stigma.
Well, if it was Jim Nantz with a dog partner, it would definitely be a golden retriever.
Well, like, and that'd probably be an upgrade from Phil Simms, to be fair.
Everybody's an upgrade from Phil Simms.
Any animal would be an upgrade. So I think before we jump in, actually, I want to pose this question before we jump in to our year review. What animal is Vern Lundquist? This was the year of Lundquist, it felt like. So what?
Basset hound. Yeah. That was quick.
I think he's like a chubby otter. That's.
I can see that.
And like Gary Daniels is the beaver.
I can see that.
It's like the beavers and they're good friends.
Yep. Yep. Are beavers and otters friends
when they're watching SEC football?
This feels like I just like stumbled into some weird sex terminology. Like I feel like if you I feel like if you typed into like you know Google.
Well,
otters
we
and
are
beavers,
the kinkiest
like,
podcast on
Half
Guarded. So
yeah,
we bring the kink. We don't kink shame either. So Trump, you want to come on the show? We'll talk. We're not kink shamers.
Yep. We're into whatever you're into, yeah. Whatever
but,
you want, baby. We're
let's
into
stick
it.
To sports. Let's jump college football year in review. We're a week removed. I think this was a pretty fun season. I wouldn't say it was one of the craziest seasons in the history of college football, but it got kind of wacky near the end. It was pretty fun. What are some general thoughts before we kind of jump into different kind of categories for how the season went? Like, how would you describe the season to maybe your grandchildren? They came up and they asked, Papa Ford, what happened in the 2016 college football season?
If I had to compare it to any season, it would probably be that first year of the BCS where it was Tennessee versus Florida State. And going into the year, everybody's like, yeah, those are the best two teams. And then at the end of the year, yep, they played each other. And it was like, yeah, those were our best two. And there they were at the end of the year together. It's like you said, it was an exciting year. There was lots of good football played, but we didn't get a lot of curveballs. Like at the end of the year, we had two awesome teams. Those two awesome teams played, and then they played a really close game. And the one that was slightly better on paper won. Like there was really like no big shocks.
I think the biggest shock would actually probably be Clemson losing to Pitt. Of all teams, especially after you beat FSU and Louisville, to lose to Pitt was kind of shocking. But I think
But we have those every year. Like, there's a good team that loses to, like, an 8 or 9 win team
but
in the middle of the season.
I think this was kind of a...
Yeah. I mean, Alabama's basically made that their brand. Yeah. Like Alabama's most vulnerable to Ole Miss, who's basically, like, SEC's version of Pitt.
But I think like the kind of the story from the season
was a lot better.
We kind of got a rematch that we all wanted. Like things went really. We were very lucky this year to get Alabama versus Clemson because a lot of stuff could have gone wrong. Obviously, especially with the path Clemson had.
Yeah,
to
we
take,
could have ended up.
They could
with,
have
like,
easily had two losses. You know, Louisville could have beat. You know, that Louisville game was pretty close. And as was I believe the FSU
the
game.
State. I mean, State had them beat. Yeah. State missed the field goal to send to
so
win
we
the game.
Almost didn't even have that probably. So I think we were really lucky to kind of get this rematch because I think we all wanted it after Clemson-Bama because it seemed like Clemson kind of woke up in the second half in last year's national championship game. And then we were kind of like, give Clemson another shot here because they probably could beat Alabama. And they proved themselves right.
Yep. And this is a thing other commentators have talked about, but I hope this year kind of burst that bubble of like Alabama's the idea that like Alabama is somehow so much better than everybody else and it's not even like I hope that is a thing that's died forever. Not that Alabama's not going to be the number one team in the nation or not going to be like a top three team.
Yeah.
They always are going to be. But like the idea that they're unbeatable, like I hope that's dead. And I think
I think it kind of is. I think it's kind of been exposed in these recent couple of years. I think even going back 5 years, you can kind of see the wheel, not the wheels coming off, but maybe like a layer of protection coming off Alabama.
And I think part of it is that this was the year that everybody kind of realized that being an undefeated SEC team doesn't really mean anything. Like, it's not like, oh my God, they're undefeated in the SEC. They could beat Cleveland. Nah. Like, it's a conference. Yeah. You know, this was the year where I think, according to like Bill Connolly's F-plus stuff, he's never had a year where the top conferences were as tightly grouped as they were.
I
this
think
year.
Yeah, the same. You know, this like, is 2004 with Auburn going undefeated, and you could and the SEC getting you know kind of screwed when that conference was clearly better than maybe the Pac-12 or Big 12 that year. As we kind of jump into the season, what was your most disappointing team of the year?
I would guess I have to contractually obligated to say Pitt because I picked them to win the Coastal. And their defense is just abysmal. Like Matt Canada, Matt Canada did his job. I mean, Matt Canada was every bit as good as I said he was, but that defense looks outdated. That looks like a defense that was really good 5 years ago and ain't cutting it in 2016.
I'm gonna say my most disappointing team of the year. They're gonna tie, and they were in probably the first really great game of the year. Texas and Notre Dame, two very disappointing seasons.
Yeah,
like, I think we kind of saw it come with Notre Dame, but we didn't think Notre Dame would be this bad.
No, yeah. Oh God, I did not see it coming. I thought they were going to be 11-1.
Yeah, I think we predicted that on the show.
See this
right? We kind of thought Notre Dame might sneak in,
and I think you agreed with me, so it wasn't just me. So, yeah, the Notre Dame thing came out of nowhere, and frankly, they weren't a 4-8 team. I know that's what their record says they were, but they lost a lot of close games. They were probably more of an 8-5, 8-4 team that just had no luck. But even still. Like, they should have been better than 8-4, 8-5. Like that, they were underachieving. It was a team that underachieved and then got like the worst luck in the world. And they ended up 4-8. And the coach might be
the wheels
on
are coming off at Notre Dame really quick. But as soon as there was not success, I expected the heat to really come on Brian Kelly because he's done a lot to kind of make sure he's going to run into trouble when he stops winning.
Yeah, I would compare him. I think Jim Mora is sort of in a similar position at UCLA, but it's like a guy who, even when he was winning, like Bo Pelini is the perfect parallel. Bo Pelini at Nebraska, even when he was doing well, like he just chapped people's asses at Nebraska. Even when Brian Kelly was winning games at Notre Dame, he rubbed people the wrong way, and as soon as things have like even a modicum of negativity, it's like
and especially in a major program like Notre Dame
out on a rail.
Has a lot of media coverage, a pretty vocal fan base. I think they kind of hide away sometimes, but they're very vocal. If you kind of do a little search in that Notre Dame weird world, they're very vocal.
Yeah, like what we're saying is if you go to ND Nation. And try to read that like 35-year-old website.
Or what was the other one? South Bend something? I can't remember. It was funny because they wouldn't say Boston College by name. They called him Fredo because they left the Big East and betrayed the family. They wouldn't even say the words. You couldn't even type the words Boston College, I think.
Well, then you also have the thing that like Notre Dame is, it might be a Catholic school, but it's not Jesuit like most Catholic colleges in America are. It's French-based. It's some French sect. And they're super conservative compared to the Jesuits. The Jesuits are a lot more like progressive.
Yeah, these aren't like your socialist Catholics.
Especially when it comes to education. Yeah, the Notre Dame fan, like those are the Catholics that voted for Trump.
Those are the Catholics who didn't vote for Kennedy.
And so, Yeah, they didn't vote for Kennedy either. At Boston College, like they basically just call them communists. It's like they're those. Oh, you're the ones who helped get Francis made Pope. Like it's your fault that Francis.
I bet there's a lot of heated Pope discussion at the Notre Dame forum. So we have to jump in there, Dan, and just maybe.
Yeah, one day we're gonna have to just like this came from Notre Dame forums, and it's just gonna be a bunch of people talking
segment.
About
this
imposter anti-Pope.
This came from some loud, annoying sounding. Notre Dame fan.
I am willing to bet a large amount of money that Francis has been called an anti-pope on a Notre Dame fan site.
But my other most disappointing team, Texas. Obviously, in retrospect, I feel like Charlie Strong maybe should have gotten. Am I wrong to think maybe he should have gotten another year? Because it feels like they were on the verge this year. Just some things didn't go his way, but I don't know how much of that was really his fault.
It felt like he had just sort of lost this thing, though. Like he was never going to get it turned around. You know, it felt very, I mean, we talked about it at some point, I think, but it felt very much like Rich Rodriguez at Michigan, where there was just fit issues where he just never fit
well,
in.
And, you know, it's kind of obvious why maybe Charlie Strong didn't fit in with some of those Texas boosters.
I mean, you're saying that, and I hear what you're saying, but, you know, sometimes it isn't even a thing, like, you're referencing. It's just, like, certain football cultures and certain colleges are so insular.
No, I meant he's not a Texas guy.
If you come from literally anywhere else.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Like, but Rich Rodriguez, like, Michigan fans turned, like, at least half the Michigan fans immediately rejected him because when they heard him talk, they noticed he had
a
Southern accent.
Well, you can't have some.
And it was just like,
some Southerner, coach of Michigan. Mm. You gotta have a classy guy like Harbaugh.
Even though he's from West Virginia, which, I mean, I think we would both argue is not the South.
What was that? I'm sorry.
I think we would both argue West Virginia is not the South.
Even though I think they were in the Confederacy, right? No, they split away. No,
they
don't
left
count.
The Confederacy.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
Dorks.
But, like, that was enough for Michigan fans, a significant segment of Michigan fans. And then when you threw on that he wasn't a good defensive coach, like, his thing was offense first, defense third or fourth, like, Michigan fans were just like, I don't understand this, I don't like this, I want this to be over as fast as possible. And I think with Charlie, it was a lot of, like, Charlie is not a glad hander, he's not a politician, he's not a baby
kisser.
He's
not what you kind of have to be in Texas,
and I think...
There's a reason Mac Brown stuck around for so long, and it's because he was really good at making the right people happy.
Nobody plays the game.
But to me, Strong just seemed like a bit more of a football guy. Like, he didn't want to mess around with all that other... He just wanted to coach football. He didn't want to be a president or whatever.
And you can at Texas. They want you to be the president of the state. Like, you are the... Like, when you are the head coach at Texas, you are like... It's like being the governor.
I mean, and to be honest, it's probably the second... It might be the biggest sports job in Texas. I would say maybe Dallas Cowboys QB. But number two, most famous person in Texas is probably the Texas head football coach.
Yeah. I would say that's right
a
up
good,
there.
When Dallas is good, when Dallas is either really good or really bad, they're going to know who the QB is. If they're mediocre, they might not know.
And so Charlie, I think, always had that going against him. I think he got off to a really terrible foot with assistant coaches in Texas. I mean, with high school coaches in Texas. And I don't think he ever fully got his way out of that.
And now you get Tom Herman, who wants to just run a propaganda machine. So he's kind of...
Yeah, I don't know. That struck me as weird, too. Like, Tom Herman got off to a bad foot because you... Like, there's so many, football is so big in Texas that you can't start telling the parents what to do because they know they got more pull than you.
Well, I loved you said, don't tell reporters this, and immediately a parent was like, hey, you're never going to believe
this
shit.
Within, 20 minutes. it didn't even make it, an hour before they told reporters this. Because the people who cover Texas athletics get so in-depth with the people that they cover that you're never going to keep gossip.
Especially,
out.
I mean, I know Austin's a big town, but inside the community, it's like almost a small town, like, especially at some of these other schools, you know, like, whether it's, you know, Auburn or Alabama or Georgia, Texas, Notre Dame, everyone kind of ends up knowing everybody. You run into these people a lot, you know, you run in the same social groups almost. So it is a bit like, you know, weirdly Mayberry-esque. Is that fair to say at times?
I mean, Austin is Austin has kind of gotten bigger as a city. It's maybe outgrown a little bit of that, but there still is that that small college
town. Yeah, I think there's a difference
the
between Austin
everything.
Proper and UT in terms of the community aspect. If that makes sense,
that's fair. So I just think he never. I think there's something to be said for. Guys have to sort of fit the job. You have, if Charlie Strong had been a guy who was from Texas and had played Texas high school football and everything else about him was exactly the same,
if he
I think
wore
he
boots and a cowboy hat,
he's a great coach.
Charlie Strong would still be coaching in Texas. I think that's fair to say.
I just don't think Texas, and there was a big difference because Mac Brown wasn't from Texas either. Although Mac Brown did coach at Tulane, which is right there next door, so he had recruited some people in Texas before. But Mac Brown is a dude from Tennessee who had coached at North Carolina for 10 years. But the big difference is that Mac Brown came over and he brought some guys from UNC with him. But for the most part, he hired a shit ton of people from Texas. And Charlie tried to basically just bring his Louisville staff with him that had been around him and had recruited Florida really, really well. And it just, you can't do that. You have to have Texas guys on a school in Texas.
But this kind of brings me to my main point. And maybe I'm proven wrong next year, but I'm not sure it's so easy to win at Texas and Notre Dame anymore.
I can't say that about Texas because the Big 12 is not a good conference. And I feel like it's just a matter of Texas being run right, and Texas could take over that conference.
Texas could never say
it feels like Florida
have
State.
A run like Alabama anymore. Or they won't even have a run like
Clemson's. I think they easily could because they have an easier road.
I just wonder if the conference thing is going to hurt with Texas. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think some of the luster's off of Texas.
That is true. That is true in the fact that Alabama and LSU have been able to come in and recruit. But I think a lot of that is because Texas has been down. I think if Texas gets back to winning a lot of games, Alabama and LSU ain't going to be getting those players anymore. Like, the big lie that I think A&M fans especially bought into is, Texas is down and we're in the SEC. We're going to pick up all those great Texas players they used to get. And the reality is, Alabama got them. Nah, LSU got them. But if Texas gets back to being Texas, they're going to get those players.
Yeah, the team that's probably going to be hurt the most by this will probably be like A&M, Arkansas, and a bit Oklahoma.
Yeah, I mean, Oklahoma I can't figure out. It seems like they just cannot recruit.
Yeah, I got a little prediction, Dan. Like, I don't think Stoops is there in 3 years. I think he'll retire.
I don't think so either. I agree with you that. I think he's going to take a shitty NFL job just to avoid saying he retired. Yeah. But like, say like some really crappy NFL job comes open. I don't think he'll take the 49ers job just because.
Kyle Shanahan.
Like, I could see him taking the Redskins job in like a year and a half after Dan Snyder blows up with the Gruden boy.
So that's
like I feel like he's always been a guy who wanted to prove he could be successful in the NFL anyway. And it feels like everybody's getting tired.
Yeah, doesn't
of it?
It kind of feels like Oklahoma
just tired
needs
of it.
It sounds weird, but they kind of need a change because it's just kind of getting stagnant at Oklahoma. And that's, now mind you, it's like a rich man's Mark Richt situation here where probably going to be as good once you get rid of Stoops, but sometimes you do need to rip that Band-Aid off and just kind of rebuild.
It's basically like it's a loveless marriage where they're both good parents. And so they just keep sticking it out because they're like, well, shit. Like, he is a good dad. And, you know, she is a good mom. So let's stick together. But, like, they don't really love each other anymore.
So, but yeah, Dan, well, let's jump into this. Who's your player of the year?
It's got to be Watson. He was the best player on the best team, and if they took the Heisman vote after the bowl game,
I'd say Watson too. I mean, best player, like he's the best player, best team, but probably the best player in the country. A guy who carried that offense. Like, I know you have Mike Williams and some other guys, but I think Watson makes people better around him.
I'm not totally comfortable saying carried because they did have the best wide receiving core in the country, but their offense was so much based on his skills. Like, their offense was him running, and he didn't run as much this year, but his throwing and his threat of the run, because their run game wasn't great. It relied really heavily on people being afraid of him running. So a lot of it was him, and I feel like their offense is going to take a two or three steps back next year without him. I think their defense
is
going
to be a more defensive kind of step there. All right, so I want to do this, Dan. I want to go conference by conference. And do you think you could pick a player of the year from each conference?
Because
obviously ACC,
let's try that.
Watson, I think that's fair to say. But I'd say second place, Cook. Yeah. Cook really impressed me at times this year.
Yeah. The Louisville quarterback,
Jackson did have a good year. But like, it's just, I think the way his season ended just really put a bad note on a lot of things for Jackson. But they did, you know, he did blow up FSU.
But Dalvin Cook wasn't good for like the first 4 or 5 weeks. So they kind of had opposite seasons where Cook got good at the end of the year and, you know, Jackson fell apart at the end of the year. I think I would have to go Jackson too, just because
let's jump to the SEC.
He did win that little. Oh God. Yeah, it would have to be, I'd probably give it to Bo Scarborough, even though that's stupid. But
I think I'm giving it to Myles Garrett.
He's not.
From A&M, the D-end.
Yeah, you could
do that. I think he had a very impactful season. Yeah. And, I mean, I think half the reason A&M was even decent this year was because of his pass rush on the defense, the way he kind of changed things. I thought he had a very good year. And he'll probably go top three in the draft.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah, he's. I would say he's probably most likely to be a good pro.
But, you know, you say that, we'll jump to the Big Ten. My player of the year probably won't be a good pro. Peppers. Thought he had a phenomenal year. He was great at Michigan. And probably helped carry that Michigan defense more than he gets credit for. That defense was really good. I'm not saying it was bad in one player, but he made them special.
He was just the dip. He's the kind of guy that when they come around, they turn a really good defense into a
great. Yeah, it's like when you pour chocolate sauce like on top of your sundae.
Almost every great defense has that kind of play.
He's the sauce. Like, yeah, the dish is already good, but the sauce makes it excellent.
We're in agreement again. I still think Peppers could be an NFL player. I think he could end up in a
Palomalu role. Yeah, I got to see.
Because Palomalu was never a great a great coverage guy. He was just a crazy athlete who could sometimes get back and make some crazy plays.
It'll be kind of what situation
he was so disruptive
he gets
in the
put
run
in with a smart defensive coordinator who's willing to be creative with him. He could have a good career, but if he falls to a dumb coach, which is like 80% likely with the NFL, probably be misused and then like just get burnt by tight ends at safety every play, be my guess. All right, let's jump Big 12. Yeah,
it's Baker Mayfield.
Baker Mayfield, yeah.
I mean, it's really
he might be the best quarterback.
I mean, he was like the only player in the conference that made you think. He was basically the only player in the conference that made you go, yeah, he's pretty good. Like, it was a Although the Big 12 did come on at the end of the year. They had that awful out-of-conference, you know, in the regular season. But then bowl season, they were, you know, they had the third
best
record.
Well, we're not counting the Sugar Bowl,
behind only the SEC and the ACC.
Auburn's quarterback's got hurt.
You got to give it up.
And if they weren't playing
they still won the game.
A woman beater probably wouldn't have won that game. People forget that.
It happens, man. I'm willing to bet there's a guy on Auburn.
I believe he was cut from the team. He's accused of rape. And then found to be not guilty, still cut. You get accused at Auburn, you're out. Don't even hang around girls with Gus Malzahn.
Sure.
You can't smoke some pot and have guns
Gus
with
Malzahn.
You. Gus Malzahn. That's okay. You just don't.
Well, that's called being an American.
It's called being in Alabama. But
don't tell me not to be
an
American.
Who's your Pac-12
I can't turn
player
this off.
Of the year?
This is the toughest one because the conference blew. I would have said Jake Browning, but he had a terrible last two games of the year. I might still say him, but ooh boy, like when Sam Darnold, I'll go with him.
I'm gonna stick with Browning.
USC,
I don't mind that. But another player we're probably not. How about a Dory Jackson on the defensive side of the ball?
I like it. I like it.
I mean, great season.
I just think the Pac-12, the Pac-12 has got to do a better job of being good. Because their conference was asshole this year. I mean, the reason, and I'm not trying to take anything away from Washington, but they're like a 9 or 10 win team that ended up in the playoff because their conference was so bad. And Colorado was like a 7 win team that ended up winning 10 games and winning their division because the Pac-12 South was low key the second worst division in college football this year.
All right, and let's do our miscellaneous conference player of the year. So that's going to include American. It's going to include the Fun Belt. It's going to include, what is the Conference USA? Does that still exist?
Barely.
And then the Mountain West.
I'm going to go with the USF tailback Marlon Mack. I think he's a future NFL player. I think he's going to be drafted in the third round and is going to be in a Pro Bowl next year as a rookie. I could really see that happening.
This is a toughie for me because I'm really bad with names. But one of the Army running backs, and that's including the quarterback. I can't remember the quarterback's name. I was just kind of impressed with the year Army had. Like, you know what? I want to keep it classy here, Dan. The whole Army team gets my miscellaneous player of the year. The troops.
Sure.
It goes to the troops. Good year for the troop schools. They all act as one. Because it's an army of one. So, pretty good year for the Air Force, Navy, and Army.
I'm pretty sure they don't use that army of one phrase anymore. I'm pretty sure they don't.
I do. Because I'm a uniter, Dan, not a fighter.
How can you be an army of one if you're telling everybody to be an individual in the army? It seems like a place where being an individual gets people killed.
But yeah, because you know what, Dan? I will like to talk about this. Do we kind of see, not a resurgence, but are we kind of at the point where maybe all the military schools are going to be bowl teams year to year?
Well, there is that thing that since Vietnam, the Army is never any good during wartime. Army cannot field a good football team when we're at war. So if we're able to have like an extended period of international peace, that does increase Army's odds of being able to put a good football team out there on the field. I think the other thing is that Ken Niumatalolo, like, is going to get a head coaching job in a major conference in the next year and a half.
That's probably my name to watch.
I'm kind of shocked he didn't get one Purdue, this year.
But Purdue's just really dumb, apparently. So, the Purdue hire a coach, or am I crazy?
It did just slip my mind, but for some reason I think they did okay. Give me a second. Let me hit up.
Let me fill some time. So yeah,
I mean Minnesota got the head coaching hire of the year, getting PJ.
Oh, that's right. That was probably the best fit too. I love that move.
Because Minnesota doesn't really have much of a football culture. Oh yeah, Purdue that's hired Jeff Brohm. They did good. The Big Ten West making some good hires. PJ Fleck to Minnesota, Jeff Brohm to Purdue. You know, there's a lot of room to get good in that division. Look out for the Big Ten West. Let's see. There's another big head coaching hire this week.
And that's Rhett Lashey
to UConn. Justin Wilcox to Cal. Oh.
Or we're going to talk about that.
That's not who I was talking about. I was talking about Cal firing Sonny Dykes and hiring Justin Wilcox, former Washington and Boise State and USC defensive coordinator. Yeah,
Like that move, or is Cal just kind of going to be stuck where Cal's at? Kind of where Cal's kind of been historically, right?
Cal's usually the worst team in the Pac-12 or close to it. It feels like them, I mean, Stephen Godfrey had a big dishy article up about this, and he's a guy who's pretty well plugged into Sonny Dykes. So I think that is at least Sonny Dykes' side of the story. But Sonny Dykes believed he was hired to clean up the APR, which in the last years of former coach Jeff Tedford was terrible. He did that. Recruit better players. He did that. Win more games. He did that. Check, check, check. But Sonny Dykes, because he was always interviewing for especially any job that came open in Texas, that did not ingratiate him to Cal. And Cal got a new athletic director who's a former Cal wrestler who was not happy with him, his wandering eye, and that was pretty much the end of that coaching relationship. Cal went out there and just hired a guy from the Pac-12, which Justin Wilcox has been kind of up and down as a coordinator. They loved him at Boise. They loved him at Washington. They didn't really like him too good at USC. So I'm not sure. And he has coached at places that can't get great talent, so I do think he could be a good coach at Cal, but he's never been a head coach, so we'll see. We'll see. Cal's one of the hardest jobs in the country. I'm not exactly thinking he's going to knock it dead there. Sonny Dykes is going to be fine. Sonny Dykes has already been hired as offensive coordinator at TCU. He will probably be the Texas Tech head coach next year because Cliff Kingsbury has been a terrible, terrible head coach there, and Sonny Dykes is an alum at Texas Tech. His dad was the coach before Mike Leach, so I could see Sonny Dykes ending up at Texas Tech next year. I think he'll do well at TCU, and that'll help him get that job. But
so,
Cal, I think part of the here's how you know Cal's probably screwed. They wanted to fire Sonny Dykes 2 months ago, but they needed to take a month and a half to get budget approval. That is never the sign of a program that's going to be winning a lot of games soon.
So let's do kind of our last kind of award here then. Who's your coach of the year?
Well, the easy one is Dabo because he ended up knocking off the monster, right? But I would say it's McIntyre. I think what he's been able to do at Colorado, yes, the Pac-12 South was bad this year, which made his road a lot easier. But my God, Colorado, when he took that job, did not have money for chairs in their film room. Like John Embry, the former coach, had to go to Walmart and buy folding chairs because the school didn't have the budget for it. For Mike McIntyre to take that program over and in just a couple of years, turn it into a division winner in a Power 5 conference, even if it's the worst Power 5 conference, the fact that he was able to do it is a hell of an accomplishment, and he has every right to be over the moon at what he did there.
Here's my coach of the year, James Franklin.
Yeah, that's hard. I mean, I can't argue with that either.
Regardless of his questionable moral standings, taking a job at Penn State, did a pretty good job. Especially with Penn State under the scrutiny.
Won the division title.
You know, it's not a good brand, needless to say. And to, yeah, maybe it's different to some college football players, but it probably doesn't help with recruiting, having that stigma that kind of sits with Penn State. And he did a good job rebuilding the program and, you know, didn't win the Rose, almost won the Rose Bowl and won a conference title. So
it was the best bowl game of the year. Well, it was the second best bowl game, depending on what you think of the championship game. Those were the two best games, the Rose Bowl and the national championship. And he won, you know, the Big Ten with teams that were not as good talent-wise as Michigan and Ohio State, and he beat them both. You know, well, he didn't beat Michigan, but he won the conference over both of them. So give it up.
Yeah. So I think that kind of recaps. Okay.
Well, okay. Before that, who was your worst coach of the year?
Butch Jones.
That's a hard one to argue with.
I think he just kind of all fell apart in Tennessee this year. Looked like they were making a run, and honestly, they probably should have won the East this year. They beat Georgia and Florida. So to not even to beat those teams, and then you lose to Vanderbilt. Who else did they lose to?
They lost Missouri. To Missouri again.
So
didn't they?
To lose those games, but you get up for the bigger ones, and you don't even make the SEC championship game. Pretty disappointing year. And Butch Jones on the hot seat. Looked like the hero in Tennessee. Now he might be the villain. So.
Especially the rumors about how he like totally lost the locker room because he was unwilling to discipline their highly recruited, like the guys on the team that were really highly recruited. He didn't know how to discipline them, so they just ran amok. And especially Jalen Hurd acted like a total asshole. You know, that's rough. That's not good stuff that you want to hear.
But that probably
I'm gonna go with Tuberville.
Yeah, I think Tubbs yelling at the fans too. So.
He finally did get fired from Cincinnati, but he has just done a terrible job at Cincinnati. Cincinnati, before he got there, they were one of those programs that people talked about as if, yeah, they could be in a major conference. Like and when the American Conference was formed, people were like, hey, Cincinnati, now that, you know, Louisville's gone and, you know, all the Big East teams are gone. They could really do some stuff.
Yeah, and maybe
conference.
Poised to move up too.
And they were,
you have the Big 12 looking. I think that would have been a natural fit with West Virginia already in there.
Yeah, they've been a completely mediocre program. They have basically been, I don't know, East Carolina. They've been like Middle Tennessee State, but with a glorified, you know, with a nicer campus stadium. So he's done such a bad job, and he's done it at the worst possible time to be doing a bad job. Like, you could not have worse timing to be bad than Cincinnati is right now, when, like, the Big 12 expansion was on the table. And it's hard for me not to believe that if Cincinnati had been playing as well as it was under Brian Kelly, if Cincinnati had been even as good as it was under Butch Jones, I think they would have gotten added to the Big 12. I think that would have been an easier decision.
And I think that would have been an
but because
easy
Cincinnati
fit, too,
had, yeah.
Like you said, West Virginia's there. You get into the state of Ohio.
Of West Virginia.
You kind of get a bit of the South. I mean, you get Kentucky. Would have been a good fit. And they're a decent basketball school on top of that. So it would have helped with other athletics.
They would have had a lot of positives. But when Cincinnati's like a 7-win team, that like nobody is – that's not – that's not firing up.
At that point, you might as well add SMU or something.
Yeah, I mean, it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And so, I mean, that's a lot of that's on Tuberville. The team was a 9 or 10 win. He took over a team that was winning 10 games a year ish, obviously in a subpar conference, but it was still winning 10 games in its league. And he turned it into a team that wins like 6 games in that same league. Like, it's not like they moved up and played a harder
schedule.
Teams
left. It got easier.
It's the same schedule. Like, and he just sat there and watched as, like, Memphis passed them. And Cincinnati and Memphis used to be in the same league for basketball, and they used to be in Conference USA together once upon a time for football as well. Memphis was just the school that Cincinnati and Louisville used to beat the shit out of at football. And then Memphis fans would scream, "We'll get you in basketball season." And so for, like, Memphis to legitimately pass Cincinnati on the football field, that is really tough for Cincinnati fans to swallow. And Cincinnati's one of those programs that doesn't have a really deep fan base, at least not for football. The Bearcats basketball program has a pretty good fan base, but as a football program, it's It's sort of a team that just started playing football at a big level in the last 20 years. They don't have the deepest fan support. And obviously, like, the Bengals are always going to be more important, you know, in Cincinnati. And they're not a team that can really afford to be bad, because when they're bad, the fans stop coming. You know, they're not fans with a lot of entrenchment, as you'd say. So it's just been everything about the Tuberville era at Cincinnati was just a huge disaster. At the time, it seemed like Cincinnati had made this great hire because they were taking a coach away from Texas Tech, who was in a Power 5 conference. But it's just nothing has turned out, and now they're hoping that Ohio State's dumb meathead defensive coordinator, who may not even be competent, now they're turning to him. So I don't know. Cincinnati's in a bad place right now, and Tuberville's a big reason.
All right, but I think we can finally close the book on the 2016-2017 college football season.
They're all great. They're all great in their own ways. I think if you ask me what my memories of this season are going to be, it's the year that the ACC obviously claimed the top spot. It's the year the conferences in general had way more parity than ever before. It's that awesome week one where we had so many great games in the first week of the season.
But we had some other great giant big games in the middle of the year, too, I think we should talk about. Because you had Louisville-Clemson, primetime on ABC. FSU-Clemson was another great game. Michigan-Ohio State in what felt like the biggest, you know, Michigan-Ohio State game in a long time. So a lot of class. Even some fun in the SEC. Georgia-Tennessee this year was a very fun game. You know, with the heroics at the end. There was a lot of fun this year, and a lot of games where a lot of eyeballs paid attention to these big marquee games. So that was a lot of fun this year.
I know you were trying to wrap up, but I just thought of another idea of going into next season. Because if we're putting the wraps on last season, at the start of next year, who are give me three coaches you think
Butch
are on
Jones,
the roster
Brian Kelly
to start the year,
and because it's Auburn, Gus Malzahn for no other reason than he'll be on the odd seat after they lose to Clemson week one.
I think I got two SEC guys as well, but I got a different one than Gussie. I think Jim McElwain.
Yeah.
Jim McElwain, Butch Jones, and
Nick Saban.
Jim McElwain and Cliff Kingsbury. Those are my top three. Those are the guys on the hottest seat.
And you know,
Bulimia
in Arkansas.
Bulimia, they're already that worn out with him that they could.
I know nothing.
They,
I don't hold my ear to the Colts
feel
or
like
Razorback
Arkansas
Nation,
fan.
But if they had another bad year.
Arkansas always feels like a place that's willing to tolerate 8-win seasons, though. Like they're not willing to tolerate losing seasons. But if you're at least getting like 6 or 7, they can deal with that. Because like Houston Nutt was head coach of that place for like 2 decades. It felt like.
Yeah, but that's maybe one. If things start off really wonky for Arkansas, maybe. But Jerry Jones isn't bored with the Cowboys right now, so that might not matter. Actually, so yeah.
Yeah, that's true. The Cowboys are good.
Takes all the heat. Notice when Cowboys were bad, Arkansas had some bigger coaching hires and fires.
Yep.
But yeah, I think
I would say, but the guys, I mean, we talked about Butch Jones, but Jim McElwain, like his recruiting is looking terrible for Florida. I mean, he is consistently turning in subpar recruiting classes, and their offense after 2 years looks like an insane disaster. I think you get a little bit of a pass because Will Muschamp was such a bad offensive coach. But if they have another terrible offensive year next year and like somebody like Chip Kelly is available, I don't like McElwain's odds. Because Florida's got itchy trigger fingers anyway. Plus the AD who hired him is gone.
So yeah, that's probably one to watch.
I think
I think we can close. But like
and Cliff
said,
Kingsbury, just because Cliff Kingsbury's one of like the three worst coaches in Power 5 football. Like that guy's just a hilariously stupid guy who doesn't know what he's doing.
I think
maybe it was a bad idea to give a Power 5 job to like a 22-year-old. Whatever.
I think with that, there's your epilogue. We can close the book on college football for another 3 weeks until it's time for recruiting. So
yep. Yep.
Yes.
Roll Tide.
you're not
going to repeat that.
I may have cursed you under my breath.
I may have
worst
just
words to
me
are
me.
RTW or GD go Dawgs. But this can suck my dick.
what's TW?
roll. Oh shit! What did I say? RT.
All the letters in that was wrong.
I don't know where the W came from. I think I was just thinking, "What the fuck?" And it just—I just added W. When I see T, I add a W now, just instinctively. So there you go. Maybe the cold medicine's kicking in there, Dad. Yeah.
Tom Waits.
Tom Waits.
Tom Waits is a curse word to you. You just hate that last album he did with all the weird stuttering.
But yeah, looking forward to next week. We're gonna mix up the format a little bit on this show. So we're not gonna announce it. We'll talk about it more next week, but it should be pretty fun. So, because you know what? Sports are gonna get boring in February, and me and Dan aren't gonna sit here and break down a Wednesday NBA or NHL game. Sorry. I would love to, but yeah, it's just not.
Yeah.
Just, you know, you don't want to hear my thoughts on the Denver Nuggets and Utah Jazz.
Yeah, nobody wants to hear what I think about the LA Kings. Are they still a hockey team, or have they moved?
That's where the All-Star game is this year.
Well, that makes sense. I would put all All-Star games
in the NHL does their All-Star game weird. They're like four teams that compete, and they do like 4-on-4 hockey. It's like really fun. It's like if you took the NBA and just did a bunch of 3-on-3
games. Isn't it like the
world
versus the USA or something?
Yeah, it's wacky, but we might cover that when we get to it. Once we get to All-Star Mania. So it might be.
You know what? If I was the NHL, I would actually do every All-Star game in Las Vegas, because why not? Like, at least reward your players.
Well, they got the new hockey team coming
there. It's Vegas, baby.
So.
Wait, there's a hockey team moving to Vegas?
I think they're expansion.
Who? Oh. Why didn't they just move that terrible Arizona team?
I guess they stayed. The Phoenix people stood up and said
no. But they have no fans.
We would not lose our Coyotes.
That would have made a lot more sense to me to move Las Vegas to move Arizona to Las Vegas.
It's NHL. They're not.
Okay. I'm not sure I'm ready for this world where like Las Vegas has multiple.
We might get an NFL. They might get. I mean, obviously, they might get a top 10 NFL brand in that city, and
they're getting the Raiders. That's almost a done deal.
Something. It's the Raiders.
It hasn't been announced yet.
Expect something weird to happen, but
yeah. But the old man's gone now. It's just Mark Davis.
Well, do they have a P.F. Chang's?
And I'll say this:
they have a P.F. Chang's in Las Vegas.
I know that this podcast takes the official position that, like, a free stadiums for owners is bullshit. But you know something? And I know you're going to disagree with me on this. But it's not that I think it's great, but I think if a city pays for a stadium once every 50 years, that's okay.
Yeah, you know, I didn't hate the... I'm one of the few, actually, who supported the new Atlanta stadium. Because, yeah, the dome wasn't that old, but... It wasn't that pretty, and
okay, that's stupid. The dome was in good shape.
I think the new stadium can do more with, though. I think there'll be more concerts. There'll be soccer games. It's gonna be fun. Open air.
Who cares? Who cares? Like, you're gonna lose your butt. You're gonna lose your butt in Texas.
Well, I don't live in the city. I'm not paying anything for it, so I don't mind it.
See, that's why you like.
Well, and I think it's all sales and hotel tax. So it's like just shit I wouldn't even ever bother with.
Aren't you in the bar industry? Like, what if you get a job in Atlanta proper?
I don't want to deal with bums, Dan. There's a reason I don't go to Atlanta proper and work. A lot of bums. You get a lot of homeless men that walk into your bar and just try to stay in there. And you can't let homeless people, you know, be warm or cool. That's ridiculous.
Sure. But I just think I don't have a huge problem with taxpayers being asked to pay for a new stadium once every 50 years. Yeah. Like, when the old stadium is legitimately falling down, it's like, all right, yeah, you can go to the taxpayers. What I have a problem with is, like, every 15 years, just when a new stadium technology comes out, an owner starting to beg for more public money. That's
like
bull crap.
I think it's different, like I said, just with the Atlanta thing, because I think there's just going to be so much more that can be done with Mercedes-Benz Stadium that you couldn't necessarily do with the Dome. And I think it was the reason we didn't get to host Super Bowl for the past 10 years, because they like that open air with the flyover. Only city that gets away with it now is New Orleans, because, you know, Katrina. So, if we get Super Bowl back, we get a, you know, maybe a World Cup game or something silly. It's probably worth it. It'll probably pay for itself.
They're afraid to put the Super Bowl in Atlanta because they're afraid all the players will get, like, syphilis the night before from the property.
Or it'll be cold.
Because the last time they had a Super Bowl... Isn't the last time they had a Super Bowl in Atlanta the year that, like, that they had a bunch of guys get caught.
Ray Lewis killed somebody, allegedly. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then,
yeah. Yeah, you don't want to do that.
The moral the moral compass of the NFL now, Ray Lewis. People forget that.
They don't want their players getting in trouble in Atlanta. There's too much for them to get into.
But we'll have the Super Bowl in 3 years, but like, so we'll see. Should be fun.
But like Mark Davis is one, he's the poorest owner in the NFL, so he cuts does not have hair. The money to pay for a stadium.
That's pretty good.
He cuts his own hair, and the Oakland Stadium is legit falling apart. Like we've talked about before, their locker room floods with sewage twice a year. Like you're allowed to ask for a new stadium if your locker room is flooding with sewage. You can ask for
Oakland's
a new stadium.
Oakland will have one pro team after all said and done.
Yeah, and they're not going to have that team very long either because the A's are working out a deal to try to move to San Jose. It's just the A's really it's just a matter of like working out with the Giants what they have to pay them to take because San Jose is technically part of the Giants TV market. And so it's just a matter of the A's paying them something for it. The way Washington eventually had to pay off the Baltimore Orioles owner to move there from Montreal. Like they had to just work something out with Peter Angelos. And once they did, you know, that's all it took. So sooner or later, the A's are going to be in San Jose.
So get excited. They'll join the Sharks. But we'll be back next week. And you know what? We're going to cover the inauguration. That's what we're doing. So be ready.
Stick to sports. Sport.
Stick to sports. Fuck you. We're not. So there we go. Yeah.